it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It could have happened at Brentford against Liverpool or in countless other games this season, and it finally has. A true humiliation. Crystal Palace 4, Manchester United 0. Representative of an injury-plagued team, the most badly coached side in the Premier League, a dysfunctional club or something else entirely. At the very least, this is a really rubbish Man United side, capable of the extraordinary for good but also for bad. A very warm welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast with me, Harry Robinson, and Jack Tate with me as always. Let's have a little MUFC therapy together. Although it should be said, I was in the Selhurst Park away end on Monday night, and you don't get much better therapy than that. So I feel all right. It was a defiant noise and I actually loved it. It was one of the best away ends of the season. More on that in a second, but also on today's show we play Guess the Player, tell you about another upcoming under-18s final, an exciting new project I've been working on with the Academy, and loads more. Jack, we've gone from the Champions League being the minimum target for this season to likely no European football at all, and it's all happened very suddenly, hasn't it?
It has. You know, while the season hasn't been good at any point really throughout, going back right to the first day when we were very disappointed with the way that we played against Wolves, actually, I think it's only really in the last 2 months that things have unravelled to the extent that they have now. Even if you go back to, say, the March international break, just before then, United were making progress in the FA Cup. Our league form still wasn't great, but we were finally scoring goals, and it seemed like we were turning a little bit of a corner in learning how to play this chaotic style. Yeah, fairly well.
We only lost two games until the 4th of April.
Yeah,
from the start of the year. At home to Fulham and away to Manchester City.
You know, it wasn't comfortable viewing a lot of the time. This United team has never been a team that you watch and say, well, that's a really good side. But everything was in front of us. Everything was still there to be achieved from this season. And the collapse in April and now the start of May has been, I mean, has it been the worst collapse that we've seen since Sir Alex's retirement? It's up there.
I don't think so, because we've got away with a couple. So you have the 1-1 draw at Brentford where, yes, we take the lead, but we obviously didn't deserve to. Then we throw it away.
Yeah.
Chelsea actually is probably the anomaly where we threw it away. But then we probably get away with one at home to Liverpool, away at Bournemouth. Coventry, we were good. It was a fine, solid performance for the majority of the game, but not for a terrible, chaotic 20 minutes. Sheffield United, we come good at the end, but again, kind of get away with one, or at least get challenged by the worst team in the league and one of the worst teams for a few seasons, Burnley, and then this. And this was kind of the culmination of all those performances, and really should have happened at Brentford, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
100%. And you wonder what the difference would be if it had happened. How long ago was that Brentford game? It was over the Easter weekend, I think. Yeah, 30th of March. So, 5 weeks ago. I wonder how things would have been if that 4-0 had happened then. Another 4-0 at Brentford, 18 months on from Ten Hag's second game.
Yeah, I mean, you can't help but think back to that 4-0 defeat at Brentford after getting beat 4-0 by Palace here. It feels like an almost sort of fitting bookend of his time so far, that both of those are at the beginning and the end. And you look at it, and I think the exact mistakes that have led to this defeat are different to the ones that led to the one at Brentford last year.
Yeah.
But I think so many of the same conundrums more generally about this team, about how Ten Hag gets this team to play in the way that he wants, they are still fairly similar, even if the sort of specifics of each game are different.
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen all that much in the way of answers to those questions.
And although you look at the response to the 4-0 against Brentford in his second game was to get them running at the training ground the day after, and he joined that, and that was seen as the kind of trigger to what followed, which was victory over Liverpool, over Arsenal, and then a good, probably overperforming first season with some bad days, particularly at Anfield. But the response to this isn't the players should have run more, I don't think. And I think the players could have done a lot more, and there should be a lot of focus on their performances, and ultimately players have to take some ownership. And these United players haven't really done that. And neither did the ones before them or the ones before them. But if it were to come out that Ten Hag had got everyone running 12, 13 kilometres the day after, you would think it was mad now, because everyone would collapse. It would just, the injuries are bad enough. So I guess in that sense, I think what's changed is what was key about Ten Hag's first season was the changing and improving of the culture. And that slipped in the second season a bit, but it's not the big issue. And I think a lot of this is, for a decade, we've known that the manager can be a problem, but is not the major part of the problem at United. And you're now, the question is Ten Hag part of the problem? And if so, how much of it? And it's clear he is part of the problem. And where you fall on he should stay or he should go will depend on your answer to the second question. But Ten Hag's real failure this season has been to make himself part of the problem. And I think he has made himself with his tactics, some of the things he said, and a lot of his in-game substitutions as well. And we saw kind of all of that on one night at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, look, you're absolutely right that this is an unfortunately familiar place to be for United and United fans over the last decade or so. But I think what should have been different about Ten Hag is that because of the ownership changes that we've had, I think he had an opportunity this season, and albeit obviously everything only got confirmed halfway through, but with that ownership change, I think Ten Hag had a chance to put himself above all of the change that was happening at the club, and to sort of put himself above the mess that this football club seems to suck managers into.
Yeah.
I think if he had set his stall out quite early on to say, this is the football I want to play, this is the football that I'm going to get my team playing every single week, come what may, I think he would have had an opportunity to sort of set his case out to Ineos and say, look, results haven't been good, but look at the players that I've been handed. You know, look at all the injuries we've had. You can see that I am building something. Give me an opportunity to keep doing it within this better structure that we should have in place now that you're on board. I don't feel that Ten Hag has necessarily done enough
to
show why he is different, or like you said, why he isn't part of the problem that we currently have. Now, if Ten Hag got hired now or at the end of this season, could he be successful at United? Quite possibly. We've seen him be very successful at Ajax. I still think there is a very good coach in there. But it's whether Ineos feel that it's gone too far this way. And I personally don't think that Ten Hag has approached this season in the best way to allow himself to almost be, like, with all the injuries we were having, the results, you could say that results were never going to be that great, which is fine. I don't think that Ten Hag has gone out of his way enough to set out his stall of why he is the man to lead this forward.
I agree.
In some ways, not completely regardless, but somewhat regardless of what the results are.
I agree. And I think the style of play that he's put forward, and this was the same last season probably, makes how you view him dependent on results more than, as you're saying, if he'd set out his stall slightly differently. I agree. On the other hand, you mentioned it. The ownership debacle wasn't sorted until Christmas Eve of this year. It could have been sorted in summer.
Yeah.
And even then, it could have been sorted in November or December, but it dragged on and on and on. You then look at the start of the season is clouded completely by the Mason Greenwood saga, when the start of the summer has been clouded by the Cristiano Ronaldo saga. Those, I actually think Ten Hag could have dealt with and was on track to deal with, as he had done in his first season with Ronaldo. Even Sancho, I still think he dealt with that perfectly well. I think what really rocks it is Martinez's injury after two games back, and then the day after, or the week or so after, the transfer window closes when Sergio Reguilón's been signed on an emergency loan deal, but Shaw and Malassia are out, as well as Martinez. And I think that's the the point at which Ten Hag seems to have decided, no, I can't do that, and abandoned what was likely the plan for his second season. And it's really difficult, because even in hindsight, you look back and think I think that probably was the right thing to do. I think at the time we were saying it was the right thing to do. If he hadn't have been pragmatic in those weeks and since, then I think things could have crumbled very quickly. But I think then there was a second change over Christmas and winter, and it's not paid off. It paid off for a few games and we rolled our luck a little bit, but it's not paid off. And he's running out of time, running out of road.
I agree with what you're saying about, I think there was a time, especially the Martinez and Shaw injuries, where things changed. I guess the two things that I would say in response, in where I think Ten Hag could have still done more, is that firstly, we did have a few games before Martinez and Shaw had their injuries where we were at almost full strength, albeit without Hoyland, which is a big deal in terms of results and obviously scoring goals. But in terms of the way that we approached games, Hoyland being there or not doesn't really change that too much. And we didn't see a massive difference from the way that we approached games last season. And so it's hard for me to say, with the evidence that we have, that this United team was going to look very, very different this year. But Shaw and Martinez getting injured changed everything. I do think they changed a lot, but the admittedly small bit of evidence that we have of when they were fit and playing together didn't look that different. But also,
do you remember that Arsenal game?
Far too long to resolve. Go on.
Arsenal away, early September, and we said, we've lost that 3-1. We actually played better than we did when we drew 2-2 last season. And we did. We took it, Bayern Munich. We took it to Bayern Munich. And it's gone so far downhill there, and it might be beyond retrievable now. And that's the decision that Ineos and those working with Ten Hag are going to have to take. But it's not just, it was mainly last season, and it was only glimpses at the start of this season, but there were signs that there might be something there in Arsenal and Bayern Munich. And then you look at the Champions League games and Onana throws a couple of them away. We're probably treading over all ground, but I think we differ, don't we? Do we differ? I still believe Ten Hag could be a successful United manager if United stick with him. It's far from a certainty. Do you think it's even possible?
I struggle to have faith in what he can do on the pitch, given what we've seen over the last couple of months. And I guess this, to the point I was going to say before, which is related to this, is that I think even once the ownership situation was resolved, which did take far too long, like you said, we have changed the way that we've played since then. We were just saying a couple of weeks ago that it's really been since like January, since New Year, that we've suddenly gone from this side that couldn't score goals and it was fairly boring to watch at times, to a team that actually we are now quite expansive in a lot of ways. And if anything, too expansive. We can't get control of a game to save our lives, but we are now this sort of high octane team in some ways that, yeah, is not particularly fun to watch as a United fan, but is involved in these high scoring games where goal scoring isn't actually any of an issue anymore. So we have changed the way that we've played, and Ten Hag seems to have bought into that as the way that he sees this team having the most success. There was still time when, even after the delayed ownership situation had been resolved, there was still time to me for Ten Hag to say, look, this is the type of football we're going to play for the rest of the season. Come on.
But then
it's hard to do that with all the pressure that's on you at United. But
he also couldn't sign anyone in January. That was off the table. And you still had same key injuries that you had at the start of the season. And I've just remembered, Cobbie's out at the start of the season. Mason Mount plays 2 games, then he's out for 4 games. And so suddenly you're looking at what we were assuming that the kind of starting lineup to be, including a midfield of Mount and Maino and Fernandez. And it might not have worked. We expressed our doubts about it, I think, at the start of the season and even in pre-season, because it didn't quite seem to match up, but we don't know. And Martinez and Shaw. So, I believe that you could look back on this season in 5 or 10 years' time, and Ten Hag won't be in 10 years' time. I'm not saying that, or probably in 5. And he probably won't be here this time next year, let's be realistic. But I think there is a scenario in which he stays and you look back at this and you do say, Jesus, that was ridiculously unlucky. And he didn't handle it as well as he could have done. But the timeline of injuries and incidents is, it's mind-blowing sometimes, where you think about Cobby's playing really well in preseason, then gets injured. Mount comes into the team and 2 games later is injured for 4 games. Martinez comes back for 2 games, is injured. Shaw, Malassi above get injured, and we rely late on to sign Reguilón from Spurs, where he isn't wanted there. He goes to Brentford, he's not particularly wanted there either. And then Onana starts throwing the ball into his own net, and all of these things are happening. It's then the ownership gets delayed. It's all ridiculous. Højlund gets injured at the start, doesn't play for 2 weeks. Then he hits a run of form, as United hit a run of form. He scores 6 in 7, I think. He then gets injured for a couple of games, and that's when the slide started towards what we have now. So, yeah, I'm making excuses, but I think they are, I think they're valid ones.
Well, the excuse, like, they are excuses, but they are real excuses. They are reasons why this season has been challenging. I don't think anyone, even the most critical of Ten Hag, would dispute any of that. I think the problem for me, though, is that, as I said a couple of weeks ago, the thing I come back to is he needed to give fans a reason to feel invested in him. If the results weren't going to go well because of all those injuries, which I think is something that fans can generally accept, he needed to give us a reason as a fan base why we should support him, why we should believe in him. Not even support, that's probably the wrong word, because we'll support a United manager no matter what. We should anyway. I just saw from the away end at Palace on Monday. But it's more, give us a reason to believe in you. Give us a reason to think that you are the man that can lead this team forward when you do have all your players available, when hopefully we will be making smarter decisions in the transfer window, when we will have a better footballing structure at the club that won't force you to get sucked into everything. As me, someone watching this team week in, week out, Ten Hag has not given me a reason to believe that he is the right person for that job. And that is where I think he's let himself down.
Yeah, yeah. He's been waiting for players to return from injury for months, and they never have. And he's not been able to deal with that. And the problem is basically his short-term solution at the start of the year, because those injuries didn't improve, has extended to what's now nearly a five-month style of play for United, one that he's committed to and has led to a slide down the league and potentially him losing his job in the summer. And I think he's got swallowed up by the situation, and that the way United are playing now was not the way that we were meant to be playing at this stage of the season, but was the way we were going to play until Shaw came back, and he did, and then he got injured again. Martinez came back, he did, and then he got injured again. And it's really those two, but there are a couple of others as well. In terms of the support sell-off part was amazing. And honestly, it was certainly my best away end of the season. There was just as the third goal went in, it was... It's like an unspoken kind of wave goes over away ends or at Old Trafford sometimes as well, and kind of this unspoken wave of defiance. And you'll get, there were lots of people leaving already, and you often get a bit of like argy bargy between those who are staying and those who are leaving, and saying you should stay and back the team, and like people saying, oh, you'll be there at Wembley, but you're leaving now, etc. But then that core that's left behind, and it's not just a core, it's over half of the away end, is, yeah, just that sense of defiance. And it's we've kind of alluded to this recently, that identity isn't all about winning. Nights like that show it. It's about that sense of community and belief in your club, and yeah, that shared sense of defiance with those around you. And it's the perfect demonstration of that. And it's mad that I came out of the ground buzzing when we'd lost 4-0. But that's the reality of it. I'm not lying. And I think that's...
Football's mad that it can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was great. I woke up the next morning. I got home at 3 a.m. I had to be at work for 9. And I woke up very bleary-eyed. And then it sunk in. And it was like, oh, we've lost 4-0 to Palace. Yeah, for the night itself. And it's obviously a coping mechanism, but it's a very good one. We've got a couple of questions from Matt Peck. They're interesting. He says, theoretical, do you think if the Glazers were in control of the sporting side still at United, would Ten Hag have already been sacked? I think yes, because Champions League has gone. And it used to be a financial decision whether managers stayed or went. And yeah, I think Ten Hag would have run out of time with the Glazers 2 years ago, or if we were a year in the future, he would have run out of time by now with Ineos firmly embedded. I think one of the key things here is, and one of the key questions is it worth Ineos spending the next few weeks and months searching for the right successors to Ten Hag, or is it better that they focus on changing the behind the scenes culture, the operation and the structure of the club? And so you've got the past and the future. I think, yeah, he would have been sacked in the past and both the future. This is a really unique time.
Well, I mean, it's a tricky one to figure out, I think, with the Glazers, because you're right that it's generally just been Champions League or bust. And as soon as that is no longer possible, a manager goes. I think the slightly strange thing about this situation, like we said, is that actually things have gone downhill so quickly. It's really been a month, maybe 5-6 weeks of really terrible form.
Yeah.
You know, you think about where we were, what was it, March? Was it 23rd, 25th when we beat Liverpool in the FA Cup? And at that point, all right, the form still had been a little patchy before then, but we sort of got away with it. And we're riding this massive high, and it's been such a quick decline from then. I think there's a good chance he would have already been gone and that we'd have a caretaker manager in place at the moment. Whether it be maybe Darren Fletcher would have come in and stepped in as manager for the last few games, maybe it'd be a Wayne Rooney type figure, whoever it would have been. It wouldn't surprise me if that is where we would
and
be.
And I'm glad that isn't the case.
I am glad that isn't the case. 100%.
I've just looked at the league table from when we beat Aston Villa away, and we were still 5 points off Villa in fifth and six off Spurs, but we were five ahead of Newcastle.
Yeah.
And West Ham, six ahead of Brighton, nine ahead of Wolves. We were 10 ahead of Chelsea, and we're now behind them. So yeah, it's you're right to point out how quick it's been. And do you think he would have been gone in the future?
I think given that the way that he's gone about this season, if he did everything the same, then yeah, I think he would be.
Yeah.
And I think he would have probably been under more pressure earlier as well.
But I don't think he would have done things the same. And I think that's one of the things in it. We've spoken about players needing the conditions to thrive. And you look at the discussion around Jadon Sancho this week as Borussia Dortmund reached the Champions League final, which is good for football. You look at Rashford's career and Shaw and lots of people at United. We have spoken, but in a different kind of context about, we don't speak in the same way about managers needing the conditions to thrive. And Ten Hag hasn't this season. So far removed from it. So yes, he would have been sacked if he did this in the future. But I don't think there's any scenario in which without the unique conditions this season, this happens. So it's a really hard hypothetical.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I don't think he would have gone through it the same way at all. But if he did, I think he would have been under pressure sooner than he was.
Yeah. Matt's other question is, if United have decided to sack Ten Hag, so say behind the scenes that has happened, what are the pros and cons of keeping him until the end of the season if we know he's going? Matt says he thinks the decision has already been made to replace him. I don't agree. I think they're delaying. I think partly because any decision made now creates a huge amount of speculation that's not helpful for them. And I think they'd like to do it quickly if that is to be the case and have the successor lined up. But you've got that massive Van Gaal elephant in the room, which is if he wins the FA Cup, what happens then? So you'd think they'd probably want to make a decision before then and communicate that decision at least internally. But I don't think the decision's been made already. The pros are, I think it's the right thing to do. I think you should let a manager who's got you to a cup final manage the cup final, first of all. But taking away that stupidly high horse view, what are the other pros of keeping Ten Hag till the end of the season? I mean, first of all, the players haven't stopped playing for him. And that's usually when you sack a manager.
Yeah. Took the words right out of my mouth. I think that is number one. Anyone who comes in now is not going to have any time to actually it substantially changed the way that we play. They also don't have... There are two main reasons to me why you bring in a new manager on such a short time frame like this. One would be because the players have stopped playing for the current manager and it's just creating a toxic environment. And two would be if you think that the manager is making really bad decisions in terms of who's playing every week, and that a new manager would come in and be able to fix some of that just by changing the players, because obviously they're not going to have time to actually implement any sort of new approach to the game. Well, even if we think that the teams that Ten Hag are picking are bad, we don't have any other options available anyway.
Yeah.
So that's clearly not part of it. And the players clearly haven't stopped playing for Ten Hag. If anything, we're telling them to slow down half the time to actually try to gain control of some games. I think the one almost strange part about all of this has been that despite how bad things have got, the players still really very clearly are playing for Ten Hag. And so I don't think that there's any, I don't see what we really gain from getting rid of Ten Hag now, even if the decision has already been made to sack him after the FA Cup, no matter what the result is in the final. I don't really see what it would do for us, because I don't think it would give the players a boost. They clearly are still trying on his behalf. We don't have any other options available in terms of a new team to pick. The only decision that I would quibble with about Ten Hag recently is how many minutes Antony is getting over Ahmad. And even if Ahmad had played every single minute available, it would not have made enough of a difference to change the position that we're in now.
I've summed up very well. I agree. We're going to have guests to play a clue one. Might throw clue two in there as well, because the first one's quite hard. Guess the player clue one, me setting for you, there's three through the show, is I'm a championship manager.
Whoa.
I'm a championship manager.
Okay, well, there's Mark Robbins and Michael Carrick immediately. Rooney just got sacked. He's not there anymore. God, if only I knew every championship manager off the top of my head, and that would narrow this down so easily.
Well, all right. You've got some ideas, so I won't give you clue two immediately. Before we jump into guest play clue two and a Patreon Q&A and an ad break for normal subscribers, some exciting news to distract you from the first team's malaise. And it starts like this.
Since I first came to this ground as a kid, certain moments stick out. At first sight, those breathless last minute celebrations of victory en route to a final. The theatre of dreams, Sir Bobby Charlton said. Well, that much is true. But there are those moments that are less breathless, less obviously joyful, but which bring the greatest pride. I mean those days where you see a young lad from Manchester's dream come true. We walk past the statues, we recall the glory, but there's more. There's a scarlet thread here. It's not hidden then, it's in plain sight. With Garnacho, Toon, Rashford, Beckham, Whiteside, Best, Charlton. And it's what makes this club unique. The academy, founded for Manchester kids, but now with a global footprint. Not merely a tradition, not just a blueprint for success, an unwavering, unbroken commitment to youth. With this series, it's my mission to uncover how the academy's enduring impact flows right through this club and exactly how this incredible institution works. We explore the history and culture, follow the next generation as they're educated on and off the pitch, and we hear from those who have gone before. We go behind the scenes and find out what makes this place feel like home. This is the story of Manchester United's famous academy, its lifeblood.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So Lifeblood is a new documentary series, story-driven documentary series, where I've been going behind the scenes at United's Academy, and there's going to be a series of films about history, ethos and culture, about education, innovation, sports science, coaching pathways. We followed the team in the south of France playing against Nice and Monaco. The access has been amazing. The Academy have been amazing. The way they managed to combine I'm going to use the words I don't particularly like, but they are good at what they do, a high performance environment with a genuine family feel across from like the pre-academy and the under nines all the way up to under 21s is you hear about it a lot, but being exposed to it is really special, and it's been an absolute privilege to do. Lifeblood will be out very soon, and the films will be coming out over the summer, over the spring and summer. And we talked to Alejandro Garnacho and Scott McTominay and other first team graduates. We talked to Academy stalwarts like Tony Whelan. The first day of filming back in early this year was with Tony Whelan. He gave me a tour of Old Trafford and the Cliff, and we were going into the old Cliff training ground and the older building there. One of the buildings is still open. The other is mainly unused, although it has had the roof renovated recently. And you've got the old treble dressing room. You've got the dartboard in the canteen, which was used and it's just left there from the treble winning season. You've got like old pairs of boots hanging up on the wall. You've got the old A-team dressing rooms. And Tony was sitting down and looking across the benches and being like, oh, Sammy McElroy used to sit there and George Best would be through there and Dennis Law would be through there. And his eyes were kind of glazing over. And yeah, that was the first day of filming and it's continued to be very special from there. So I'm really looking forward to it coming out. And yeah, hopefully people enjoy it. It's the Academy is the big relief at the moment, is it, compared to the rest of the club, Jack?
Oh yeah, as it often is, to be honest, in times of crisis at United. And to be honest, yeah, they've provided the best moments in the first team this year too, players coming up from the Academy, and the Academy teams themselves have been performing absolutely brilliantly all year.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll have a Academy briefing, men's and women's, after the Patreon Q&A, and we'll talk a bit more about Lifeblood after the first film is actually out. So METV subscribers can watch it on the United app, and there'll be clips shared as well if you don't want to watch the full thing but do want to hear from people like Alejandro Garnacho and Tony Whelan and Nick Cox and Adam Lawrence and see behind the scenes at the FA Youth Cup at Old Trafford and loads of other stuff. So yeah, should be fun. Guess the player clue two. First one was I'm a Championship manager. Second one is I made my final United appearance aged 25. I made my final United appearance aged 25.
Oh, well, that takes Carrick out of it. So now I'm going to need some time to think before the next clue, but I don't think that's Mark Robbins either. I think he was a little bit younger than that when he left United. Could he have been 25? I'm going to need more time to think, but
yeah,
I don't
enough.
Think it's either Carrick or Robbins on that.
Let's go to an ad break for all subscribers and a Patreon Q&A for our very supportive patrons.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Time for the Academy briefing as we come out of the ad break and the Patreon Q&A, where we had a really interesting chat about where do United go from here? Are Ineos doing the right things? Which areas are we confident about Ineos in and which are we not so confident about? So, the Academy, the under-18s, capped off their regular league season with a 3-1 home victory over Everton. Gabriel Biancheri, who's very in form at the moment, scored two. Malachi Sharp scored the other. That caps off a title winning season for the under-18s, and they now go up against Chelsea, winners of the Southern Division, in the national final at Stamford Bridge on the Tuesday, the 14th of May at 7:30 p.m. You can buy tickets to that if you want to attend. Any London-based Reds or Manchester-based Reds who want to travel down, or anyone who's in the area, it should be a really good game. Two very talented sides, and the under-18s essentially going for a treble, having already won the under-18 Premier League North, having won the under-18 Premier League Cup final against Manchester City, in which Ethan Wheatley scored two goals the night before his debut, and potentially winning this national final as well. The under-21s have been in action down in London. They played at Boreham Wood last Friday. They lost 6-2 to Arsenal in the Premier League 2 knockouts. It's a new competition format for Premier League 2 this year. United finished 12th in the regular season. That pitted them up against 5th place Arsenal. Arsenal were really on form. United started the game quite well, to be fair, but were pressing hard for the first 10 minutes, but Arsenal clicked into gear and put in a really impressive performance. And yeah, they progress in the knockouts. United go out. It's kind of as expected, probably. United's under-21s have had kind of a middling season, where they had a great away win at Stockport County, eventual winners of League Two back in August, but then they were battered away at Bolton in the EFL Trophy. Then they put in a pretty good performance away at Salford, but gave up a late goal and so didn't go through in the EFL Trophy. UEFA Youth League faced some similar things, conceded a couple of late goals to go out there. And in Premier League too, some ups and downs, but it's been quite a difficult season in terms of squad management with so many under-21s players involved in the first team, whether that be playing or travelling with the squad or just training so often. So I think they've done pretty well and some players have really come on. Midfielders like Zach Bowman in particular, for example, who didn't play as much in the 18s at the start of the season, got some exposures to 21s football and looks really impressive. Gabriel Binkeri scoring a couple of goals up there. Harry Mas getting his first experiences at under-21 level and plenty of others as well. There's also been some great news from the Women's Academy. The under-21s are national champions. They're doing what the men's under-18s are looking to do. They beat Arsenal in the national final after winning the Northern Division. Fantastic for them. The under-16s also won the PGA Cup. So it's been a really positive week for the Women's Academy. They've obviously produced in the past so many fantastic players, including for United's first team, but before that for other teams when United didn't have a team. There was a girls' academy up to 16, but the players would have to leave and they would often go on to play for Manchester City or Liverpool. Someone like Katie Zellum, for example, who played for Liverpool, but now you've got Katie Zellum and Ella Toon are kind of the leaders of the academy charge in United's team, but there are lots more coming through. I think we're up to 13 or 14 academy graduates who have played for United Women. So yeah, a lot of talent clearly. National champions, the under-21s, and that's fantastic news. United Women play in the Women's FA Cup final this Sunday against Tottenham Hotspur. It's a real shame that the game's on the same day as the men's home game against Arsenal. I think that's really poor scheduling. But the Women's FA Cup final will be at 2:30, so 2 hours before United men take on Arsenal. These two teams played off against each other in the WSL recently in a 2-2 draw at Lee Sports Village, United relying on a 92nd minute equaliser from Maya Letizia to get a point from that game. At the time that United qualified for the final after beating Chelsea in the semi-final, they were clear favourites. I think that would have changed slightly over recent weeks. I think they'll still be favourites, but United lost to Liverpool recently. They now sit fourth, but United lost 1-0 to Liverpool last week and they now sit fifth in the WSL. Tottenham just 7 points behind them and they have a game in hand, and the fortunes of the two sides have been a little contrasting in recent weeks, but Spurs not in fantastic form themselves with three consecutive draws. So neither team has won an FA Cup before. It's a really exciting one and there'll be a great crowd at Wembley, and good luck to Mark Skinner's team on Sunday. Jack, guess the player clue three before we look ahead to the Arsenal game. Do you have a guess?
Yeah, I think I've got a guess. Ooh. But I'll wait until after. It doesn't matter.
Okay, I trust you. Clue three. Bear in mind, this is a Championship manager who played his last game for United at age 25. He had loan spells at Leicester City, Watford, Wigan Athletic and Aston Villa.
Okay, so that it hasn't
tell us your guess,
100%
please.
Confirmed it, but I'm still going with the same player. I'm actually not even 100% sure this is a Championship manager currently, but do I remember seeing that Tom Cleverley got appointed as like interim at Watford fairly recently?
Spot on.
He's my guess.
He is the answer as well. And not only was he interim manager, he's now the permanent manager of Watford.
Oh, did he get appointed? Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, which is great for him. I hope it goes well. Tom Cleverley was the first footballer I wrote an article about when I was,
I think
12, Tom Cleverley and Danny Welbeck. And here we are, 12. Yeah, it was just after Robin van Persie had signed for United.
Yeah.
Or maybe just before. So it was August 2012. And I wrote a terrible, I don't have it anymore, but I found it about 5 years later. And yeah, it was awful. But yeah,
I mean, first steps. In fairness, you were probably about 10 at the time.
I would have been just about to turn 12. But yeah, correct guess. Well done. Arsenal. It could be tricky, this one.
I had a mate who supports Arsenal texting me after the Palace game, half laughing at our predicament and half sort of saying, like, if you manage to get a result against us after this. And I said to him, to be honest, I've completely given up trying to predict what's going to happen in United games, because not only do I not know before the game, but even within games, I don't know. Because at the halftime of the Liverpool game in the league, about a month ago, I was beside myself. I thought it was one of the worst United performances I'd ever seen. And it was. And yet we were 8 or 9 minutes from winning that game. It was the same thing in the FA Cup against them. This United team is completely impossible to know what's going to happen. I think if Arsenal got an early goal, we could be in big trouble. But we, again, we have, I say that, but we have come back from that before this season against good teams. So I just worry about what Old Trafford could be like if we concede an early goal. Because despite how defiant that away end was at Selhurst Park, I think some of the fans that are going to be at Old Trafford are not going to be that core who are willing to be that defiant if things start going wrong.
And also there's an awareness that if we beat Arsenal, we're helping City to win the league. So I think that takes away the defiance. If it was City coming, it would be very different. Or if it was Liverpool coming, it would be very different. I think my big concern with Arsenal is that their threat isn't... They've shown so many different ways of scoring recently, particularly from corners, that even a really good performance from United here and Arsenal could still win. And Arsenal could be poor at finishing, but might still score two or three from corners because they're doing so well recently. And we've hardly shown an adeptness for containing set pieces either. So I think that's my worry. So I can't see United winning. I could barely see United winning at Selhurst Park, and we're playing against one of Europe's best teams now. So, yeah. Is there any reason to be confident other than the fact that we're chaotic and can do anything?
Our record against Arsenal, I mean, it's not been amazing in the most recent years, but if you go like the last 10, 15 years, it's very, very good against Arsenal.
My Arsenal supporting mate said, looking forward to Anthony's winner.
Well, the second year in a row for that.
I think
one.
A lot of Arsenal fans are feeling.
I don't know. I think we've had the one obligatory Anthony goal at Old Trafford for this year.
Yeah,
already.
Probably. And I missed it. It was the only game of the season at Old Trafford I've missed. And I missed Anthony's one goal. I've been put through so many terrible moments of him playing at Old Trafford this season. I missed the one good one. Although what was the assist he made with the outside of his boot?
Oh, it was quite recent, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was incredible, to be fair.
Yeah,
and I don't think we recorded after
that.
I can't
remember what game it was, but yeah, that was very, very good.
That was a moment where you thought, wow, what this player has so much skill.
What game was that?
I can't remember.
Was it against Bournemouth?
You might be right. I'm not sure. We'll let the listeners figure it out as they go about the rest of their days. That is all we have time for. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. For more from Jack throughout the week, you can find him on Twitter at
UTD Tate, T-A-I-T.
And for more from me, you can subscribe to the newsletter I've been doing at harryrobinson.substack.com. And for updates on the podcast itself, at UTD Weekly Pod. And if you've been enjoying the show, please leave us a review on whatever application you're listening on, or subscribe to be a patron for as little as £1.50 a month, and you get bonus Q&As, ad-free episodes, and those episodes come to you earlier than everyone else as well. But thank you very much for listening. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Thank you. Podcast Network.